evening, everyone, and welcome to RCN Sports Talk presented by The Morning Call. I'm Chris Michael. Keith Groller will be along in just a bit. And we have an hour of great football conversation on the program with some special guests throughout the hour. So let's get right to the introductions. We have, leading off the program from the National Football Foundation Hall of Fame Lehigh Valley Chapters, Tony Coca and Tom Redding, and two of this year's inductees, Mr. Gene Lagathe and Steve Shiffert. Gentlemen, thanks so much for coming in. Gene and Steve, congratulations on your honor. And Tom and Tony, maybe you could start us off by talking a little bit about this year's class. Once again, another slam dunk with six great inductees, and you can talk about the organization and who's made it in addition to Gene and Steve this year.
Go ahead.
Okay. I'm the chairman of the committee that handled the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give Keith Newhart a shot. He used to do this job by himself with a little committee to help pick the guys. And he gave it to me. And he was such a nice guy to give me this job. The hardest part of my job is finding these guys. Phone numbers, addresses. Nobody has a land phone anymore. So it's almost impossible to find these inductees. The list, I'll wait to the end to talk about Gene and Steve. We have two inductees that won't be with us this year. Ed Conney, he died last summer. He was on the list. He just never got the votes while he was alive, and I made it my mission to get Ed in this year. Mm-hmm. And I talked to his wife, and she's very happy to come and to our banquet. Ed played at Central Catholic. He graduated in 1960. He was then he went up to Syracuse and played up at Syracuse in those early 60 teams. He graduated from Syracuse in 64. And those that know Ed know that he was a hero. He was a Vietnam hero, a real down-to-earth American hero, and that's one of the reasons we really wanted to get him into this Hall of Fame, but he didn't get the votes when he was alive. The second guy that's not going to make it this year is Mike Donnelly from Muhlenberg.
Yeah.
And Mike, he had about cancer, and he died.
Much too soon.
Oh, yeah, he was ready to coach.
Yeah.
Last fall. And I talked to his wife, Beth, and she was very honored that he's going to get into the Hall of Fame. He went to Ithaca College. He graduated in 75 and coached Muhlenberg. How long? You know?
About a good 12, 15 years.
And he turned that program around, didn't he? I mean,
he did an excellent job. It was the program was always successful. It took a little bit of a hiatus for a while, and then Mike came in, and Mike did a fantastic job bringing it back to national prominence, which is what his claim to fame is. He took Muhlenberg from that Division III also ran, and he took it up into the national prominence that it has in the NCAA Division III football program.
Yeah. Before we get to Johnny Spagnuolo and Mr. Kendra, I want to just ask Steve and Gene, two legends in my mind as far as coaches. You've done so much. Steve, of course, you were at one school primarily and then Notre Dame before you went to Easton. And Gene, I was going to ask you all the places you coached at, but we only have an hour, so I don't know if you can give us the full list. But what does it mean for you to be inducted into the Hall of Fame after a great career?
It's a great honor. It's I'm truly, truly honored to be picked to enter the Hall of Fame. When you look at the list of the people that have been inducted, Tony being one of them, it's just makes my heart feel great and makes me feel that 45 years in the business with all the kids and all the wins and the losses and went to battle with Steve a few times at various schools makes it all worthwhile.
Steve, we had you on about 8 months ago. You were saying you're not sure how you're going to look at the high school football season, but now that the time has passed and you obviously were watching a lot of high school football games this year, what are your kind of memories and reflections on your career?
I think it means a lot more than it did back in September or so whenever we met. And, I think as time goes on, you get to appreciate more of what you were able to do and appreciate the people who allowed you to do it. And in particular, you really get to appreciate your spouse. I mean, can you imagine what she heard over 44 years? All right, but your family even becomes more important to you. Mm-hmm. And the people you worked with, the kids you dealt with. I don't think there isn't a day goes by where something pops into your mind as a remembrance from all that. And I think the other thing is to go into a group of people, some of them are your contemporaries, but also coaches that I grew up admiring, the Joe Garrincers, the Jimmy Vankos, and people like that. It's very satisfying to be considered part of them.
Yeah. What are some of your memories? And Tony, you were inducted, I believe, 2014.
Yeah.
As you get a little bit closer now to the banquet now, what are some of your reflections? Is it games that kind of stick out in your mind? Is it the people? Is it players? Is it situations? What kind of sticks out in your mind right now, looking back at all the years?
What you do is you start to go back, and you, like Steve said, you start thinking of all the kids you coach. I mean, you had your players, you had your non-players, but they were still part of your team. They all make it up. And then you think about your assistant coaches that you had when I was the head coach or when I was an assistant coach, the head coaches and the things that you learn from various football people that you've been around. Then you start to think about, and as Steve said, I think the biggest thing is my family. You know, what your wife hears, what your kids. I was fortunate. Two of my kids played for me. So it was sort of neat to have that aspect that I could see them every day, sort of come in here and come into the football practices every day, what they did. And it was like not easy to live with Tony Coca, to be the son of Tony Coca when you came home. I mean, many times my wife would have the dinner down in the office in the basement where the kids were upstairs saying, you're down there for what you did to the kids. But I mean, they get into the Hall of Fame and you look at the names of the people in the Lehigh Valley. And when we go through this year after year and we start to look at the list that Tom has of the athletes that came through the Lehigh Valley, the people that played football, some people I don't know, but boy, I'll tell you what, this area here has a rich history of people that played some tremendous high school, college, and professional football.
And what's the criteria, too? Because that's a tough chore when you look at all the names, and some people, sometimes you look at the names that didn't make it in on a given year. It's got to be a tough process to decide who gets in on a given year.
Well, I don't know if we have the criteria we have is you have to be retired.
Yeah.
So that's how these two guys got in.
That's the first thing you asked.
You're not coaching.
We don't put people in that are active coaching or playing. I mean, obviously. We were talking before the show started, and Steve said that Easton never really had any really stars, Division I. And he said, an official, football official, and I loved doing his freshman and JV games because they blocked. That's one thing that Easton did. They blocked, and they ran the same plays on the freshman, the JV, and the varsity. Is that correct, Steve?
That's very true.
I gave credit to the one guy I knew was Bird, Coach Bird. He seemed like he was probably one of your main line coaches, and he taught. And that's one thing that as far as Gene, we coached against each other a long time too. There's one of the guys that I coach is on this list. Should I get to that right now?
We'll do that when we come back.
Okay.
All right. Our special guests for the first half of the program, Tom Redding, Tony Coca, Steve Shiffert, and Gene Lagathe. We're talking National Football Foundation Hall of Fame Lehigh Valley chapter, and we're going to have some more conversations and some more memories with these great guys in just a moment. As we head to break, our first timeout feature of the evening involved the Phillies and their rough start to the season, including some controversial comments made by players about their manager, Gene Kapler, and Vince Velasquez also rebounding after a tough start to have a nice outing last week against the Marlins. Here's some of their comments.
I have had a chance to speak to Nick, and feel really good about our conversation. Nick is a competitive guy. He wants to be out on the field every day. I have a lot of respect for that. We've seen that with other players in other sports, and all you can do is say, way to go. Like, we want you to want to be out there. At the same time, I think there's a way to go about addressing that publicly, and those are things that Nick and I are working through together. We've had multiple conversations today, and we'll continue to have conversations, and I feel good about where our relationship stands.
It was just a mechanical thing. I made an adjustment with my sights, and not try to be too fine with my pitches. You know, you get that feeling right from the beginning. The first two innings were a little bit tough, and try to change my sights from the bullpen. From pre-warm-up in the bullpen, locating my slider and curveball I had no problem with it. And then coming to the real game, just kind of went downhill for whatever reason. But again, you make adjustments mid-game at any cost. You're going to make adjustments at any time. Hitters make adjustments themselves, so pitchers have the exact same thing. So it was just a matter of just sitting down and kind of growing over that.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk, presented by The Morning Call. Our special guest for this first half of the program, Tom Redding, Tony Coca from the National Football Foundation Hall of Fame, and two of this year's inductees, Steve Shiffert and Gene Lagathe. And Gene, you wanted to plug something real quick before we get back to the football conversation.
Yeah, I've been involved with the Lehigh Valley Old Timers Association. It's now called the Lehigh Valley Athletes and Friends, and they have our annual picnic coming up. It's June 2nd. I actually brought one of these in along, and we're trying to get more in our coaches, all sports, and they come and tell their old war stories. And the guy to call is Jeff Person, and his number is listed there. I don't know if you can see it.
I can't. Why don't you say it?
Yeah, it's 398-3721. That's area code 610.
And you want to hear from Northampton County people, right?
Yes, Northampton County people. A lot of Central, Allen, and Durf got people coming. We want to get the Eastons and the Liberties and the Nazareths and the people from Northampton County, because it's for the Lehigh Valley athletes. And that's June 2nd. It's always the first Saturday. It's at Egg Hall. You can walk up and buy a ticket. You don't have to.
There's a group from Fountain Hill trying to organize some Fountain Hill people to go. Because Fountain Hill, back in the
great
60s, had great basketball teams.
You know, I sit around and I hear the war stories from the 50s and the 60s and 70s and how they won state championships and Jay Bernie Crum and now the Garancers, the stories and the Trotter stories and it's a great way of breaking bread and with your buddies and talking and having a good time all day, and it's a well kept secret. It's been great, it's been good, and now the old timers, they're getting old. We're trying to get our sons to come and pick up the tradition.
Well, stories is a big part of your event too, Tony. You're going to be the MC again this year, and I it's going to be a little more off the cuff this year with you as the MC and you running the show this year.
Yeah. So, I'm sorry. Unfortunately, Ed Watto, who was our president, passed away last year, and somehow I missed the meeting, and I was elected president. So now the president of the National Football Foundation Lehigh Valley chapter, and we have a great group of guys. But just what Gene was just saying, what this is an idea to get the people that we've forgotten about in football, mm-hmm. and the people that have made this great. I mean, it's kind of scary when you're saying we got to talk about old timers like Joe Garancer. When I cut my teeth coaching with Joe Bruce Trotter, and having those guys that I see on the sidelines, and they sort of idolize those guys. But the National Football Foundation, the Hall of Fame, not only do we do the scholar athlete, now we do the Hall of Fame and bring in the people. We try to get the people. There's a list. And the criteria is that we have to get these people on the list, and then we have a committee. We sort of break it down. We vote for those people. We try to put five or six people in every year and try to stay up, and we try to get the old-timer, try to get somebody some in the middle, and try to get the young puppies like these two guys that basically have deserved it for a long time to get them into the Hall of Fame. And well deserved by everybody that goes in. Tom does a tremendous job with his committee, and we just go. We just move on and move on and move on. But it's really a great night for the people that are out there. It's open to the public. You can buy a ticket, come. It's at the Northampton Community Center. Mm-hmm. We have a cocktail hour before for the older people, okay? And then we have the dinner, we have the inductions, and then afterwards we sort of sit around and kibitz a little bit and maybe break some more adult beverages into our glasses and talk, and sort of we tell everybody how good we used to be.
Yeah. Do these stories get exaggerated over time about your accomplishments?
Only Steve's.
Gee, thanks, Tony.
It's funny. You remember every play. When no matter how old you get, you remember the big games and you remember the individual plays. And no matter how old you are, they're always a part of your heart. And that's what makes the game so special. They stay with you forever.
I think all of us will agree when you're out in the street and you see somebody, hey, coach, you know, and you're like, yeah, do you remember me, coach? Well, yeah, I do, but, you know, it's like,
tell me your name, though.
Tell me your name, though. Who are you? Because I'm getting a little bit older up
and you
here.
Don't look the same.
I don't remember.
When
no,
16.
But it is fantastic. These guys have touched so many lives, mm-hmm. and that's the thing that I think the public looks at our finished product on a Friday and a Saturday night. They don't see the sweat and tears that goes on a Sunday, a Monday, a Tuesday. Either the kids have problems here, the kid has a problem here, and we sort of put that pieces together, and then you get the whole picture on a Friday night. And it's easy to criticize on a Friday night, but you got 25 seconds to make the call. Go ahead and do it. Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry, guys. I like to, you know, I talk.
It's true.
And as far as memories, too, because a lot of times when we talk to the inductees, they either talk about players or they talk about games. What were some of the games that stick out in your mind? I mean, Steve, just Thanksgiving alone, all the great success you had on Thanksgiving Day would probably fill up a lot of people's careers.
It sure would, but I think your first game is probably the one that sticks in your mind the most. And right. Mine started a little strangely. I had to play against my alma mater, Nazareth, at Cottingham Stadium, and God, 2 minutes into the game, we're losing. And that's not a good thing to do at Cottingham. All right? And then Mother Nature let loose with one heck of a lightning storm. And we probably had maybe a 60-minute at least delay. And then fortunately, we came back and scored 35 unanswered. But, it was a little bit of a shaky start there that first week. And unfortunately, that team, I think you remember that first team as well as that first game. That was a group where my first meeting with Easton football players, 6 or 8 individuals showed up.
Wow.
That was it.
Wow.
And we ended up getting beat 6-3 in the Eastern Final by CB West that year. And that was the Central beat us by a touchdown. They won a state championship, and we made it to the Eastern Final. So that was pretty special, you know. Mm-hmm. You're scared to death going into the season. You don't know what to expect, and nobody comes to the meeting, and then all of a sudden they just gelled and turned into a heck of a football team.
Gene, what was your first first year like? Was that Emmaus?
Eddie Emmaus, yeah. I was blessed to have Fritz Hafaker as a mentor. I mean, he is the master as far as knowing how to get the most out of kids. He knew how to push everybody's button, and he taught me how to work with kids and how to, no matter how hard you push them, you always, you know, put your arm around them in the locker room before they go home and let them know that you love them. And, but as a head coach, I remember, my first year in 76 as a head coach and, having Casey Keeler as one of my captains and beating Barry Fetterman, who was a great, great coach who's passed away, on a last second field goal by Teddy Oops. We broke their 17-game win streak. The following year and 2 years later in 78, I remember one of my best wins as a head coach was a tie. And we tied Easton 7-7. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if they were 10-0-1 that year. And, that was a big moment for me. And just one of my greatest wins as a head coach was a tie. Yeah. But, you know, and
Steve doesn't remember that game.
Oh, yes.
So that was a great one. Yeah, they mercy ruled us the next year. They got back at us. But, I mean, they went in the state championship with, Austin Scott and Decker brothers and, not getting beat, going all the way to the end. You know, and it's just and the kids, the kids along the way. I mean, the Keith Thorneys and the Scott Carrahers and the Austin Scotts and, I mean, the Casey Keelers. And there's so many kids and so many coaches, assistant coaches. I mean, it's hard to put it all into a couple minutes, but they're all great moments that live with you forever.
All right, we'll have our final segment with Gene Lagathe, Steve Shiffert, Tony Koch, and Tom Redding in a moment. A quick plug for our upcoming broadcast on location, Sports Talk Gets Wild. Our first show will be out at Buffalo Wild Wings on Grape Street in Whitehall. Our first show's on Thursday, May 24th. The show starts at 7, but come on out early. And we're going to have guests from the Lehigh Valley All-Star Football. Both Kevin Ronalds and Tom McCarroll, the head coaches, will be there with some players. And the entire event is to raise money for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society for this event. More information coming soon at the RCN TV website, rcn.com/RCNTV, and the RCN Facebook page as well. Lafayette College brought in one of the premier coaches and players from the DMV to take over the Leopards softball program this spring. We talked with their new head coach and her players about a new era for the program.
I was two-time Gatorade Player of the Year, which I didn't even know what that was before I got it. So that was pretty cool. And so it was kind of one of those things where you weren't really out searching for, you know, awards or accolades. They were just kind of coming with the territory, and that was pretty cool. Most of my teammates went on to play Division I softball, which was a huge piece of it as well. And so that was a really cool and fun time, especially when I go back home and get to see my friends and go back to the high school and see some of the great things that have happened with the softball program since we left. I think the toughest challenge is, you know, we've just numbers-wise, we're not super deep at very many positions. So I think over time, one of my goals is to just help get our depth to a better place so that we don't have to be so worried about injuries, or, you know, we can rest people when they need rest and things like that. So I think one of the challenges is just, again, going to be in the recruiting process, finding the right kids, getting the right number of kids, and continuing to bring up the level of talent and the level of play.
There's definitely a lot more energy this year. We have a lot of new things going on. They're incorporating a lot of new skills and, like, showing us new ways of doing things. So it's just been great.
As a senior, especially having it be like for my last year, you know, I've known the same thing for the past 3 years. But it's also kind of easy because when a new coach comes in, they pretty much decide, like, here's my philosophy. Everyone get on the same page right now. So it is easy to get people on the same page because she so clearly, like, lays out what she wants us to be thinking. It's been really fun. It's been really, like, reinvigorating.
We have we've had minor, like, assistant coaching changes every year, but with a head coach like Coach Caitlin, it's actually very exciting to get a new atmosphere, develop a new culture for the program. She's really great with us. Like, she teaches us a lot more than what we've known in the past, and she knows how to hire the right assistants and stuff like that. Like, her recruiting's great, so everyone has really good confidence in what she can do for the art program.
We're definitely on an upward trajectory right now, for sure. We've had a lot of, like, really close games that we've ended up dropping in the end, which, like, those are obviously, like, those hurt a lot, but it's better to lose a close game than to lose a blowout. We just played Bucknell this weekend, and we were winning, and I believe, 2 out of the 3 games at some point, and they just had a few, like, late-inning rallies that left us in the losers side. So that was tough, but it's also, we're showing a lot of improvement, we're showing a lot of fight, we're scoring more runs, our pitchers are shutting down the other team. So overall, like, I'm really excited to see what the end of the Patriot League season is going to look like.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk, presented by The Morning Call. Our final few minutes with this year's Hall of Fame inductees, Steve Shiffert and Gene Lagathe, and also Tony Koch and Tom Redding. Tom, you wanted to touch on the banquet
and contact information. Do a little ad here. The banquet will be on May 4th, the Friday night, at as Tony said, 5:30. Tickets are $30. If you need and want a ticket, give me a call. I'll give you my phone number, 484-515-1409. I need a number, a hard number, by April 30th. So you get 2 weeks, give me a call, order tickets. Again, it's at the Northampton Banquet Center. And you said, I got two guys that are going to be inducted that we didn't talk about. I just want to quickly mention them. Dan Kendra III, that's Dan Kendra's junior's son, who played at Becca High for his father. 1996 he graduated. Then he went to FSU and played for Danny Kendra's college coach down in Florida. Mm-hmm. And then I think the best story about Dan Kendra III is that he was supposed to be their starting quarterback, and then boom, got hurt. But he came back and became their starting fullback. I think that's one of the great stories of football. And the other guy is Johnny Spagnuolo. Becker High graduate of 75, Yale 79, and of course he was a Philadelphia Eagles standout.
Yep.
And he finally agreed to come to this banquet. You talk about the first year coach. My first year coach was at Becker High, and we beat Easton 7-6 on a here's what it was. I had a nose guard by the name of Mikey Brown. He was like an All-American at Lehigh wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
And Spagnuolo was the middle linebacker. We did this X stunt, and both the ball went up in the air. And I don't know which guy caught the ball, but that was the winning touchdown.
Huh.
And that made Becker High an undefeated season.
Wow.
Yeah. And that was the last game of the year. So,
wow.
But that was my first year coach. It was unbelievable.
And Gene, you came back to Bethlehem Catholic. You were down at Southern Lehigh for a while. You came back with Kyle Haas when he was there for that 1 year at Bethlehem Catholic. And that seemed like a really interesting team, a tight-knit team. And obviously they had a lot of success on the field as well.
Oh, it was a great, great experience for me as the elder statesman, so to say. I mean, we came together. I was the oldest coach by 20 years.
So everyone listened to you, right?
Everyone listened because they knew I'd been around the block a few times. But, yeah, they came together. Kids believed,
yeah.
You know. And we have a motto that we get stuff done, and that's what we did. We got stuff done, and they expected us not to be anything because it was a transition year where the head coach was out, and Kyle's got this interim tag, but we slowly got it together, and they believed in each other. And it's amazing the true sense of what a team is, you know. If you can come together, individuals come together, and they see that the sum is greater than each individual, I mean, what they can accomplish, you know. And we were going to beat Imhotep that year. We got first down, was like 3 minutes to go, and we were inside the 20, and then we got a penalty, set us back, and then we ended up falling short. But
that's the closest any Lehigh Valley team has gotten to beating.
Yeah, we were close. We thought we should have been in Hershey. But, yeah, it was a great experience, and I totally enjoyed it. The staff, we had a great staff, guys, and mostly all juniors on that team. And we were hoping for bigger and better things, but the ball takes funny bounces, you know.
We only have 2 minutes, but was that more rewarding? Because you all had great teams on paper and predicted to be number one in a given year. But you also had years in which you were kind of underdogs or off the radar, and you kind of rose to the occasion. Was that even more satisfying when you had teams that
absolutely
weren't expected?
Absolutely. This guy right here in 1998, we had a Parkland team that was really good, and we were strong, and we played this team called Whitehall, and they took the district title on us, and that was 98, wasn't it, Coach?
Yep. We had a kid named Copen.
Yeah.
And I just went in at halftime.
Yeah, we didn't show it. We were going to choice and run away. The decision was made. We're going to run right at that guy. Wrong decision.
I remember going in at halftime, yeah. And I said, Danny, you're D1. That kid across from you is D3. I'm riding your shirt tail right into this.
A great player.
Yeah. And you talk about the Becca Parkland, the year that you won the state title.
I mean,
it was like, if we beat you, we're going to win a state title.
Absolutely.
You know, Chuck Sonnen and a great team there. And Steve, we've had a lot of interesting battles. I think we beat you during my career, we beat you down at Cottingham, and you'd come up to Whitehall and just wipe us off the face of the earth every year at Whitehall, you know.
Cottingham, the most magic place.
It is.
On the face
it
of
really
this earth.
Is. It is.
I mean, it is just a magical place. Thank God they're not tearing it down. They're rebuilding it. What a pleasure it must have been for this guy all those years to be in that place and be the head coach.
It was a pleasure, but I'll tell you what. You knew everybody was coming in there with their best effort.
Yeah.
And it really made it sometimes difficult to play there, but I think that was a tribute to the Easton kids and their toughness. They knew that was their place, and they were going to defend it. And, you know, Chris, you said you remember players and so forth. I think the more you're out of it, the more you think about the kids that weren't the stars but turned into the stars.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that kid that still played JVs as a junior and then comes on and has this phenomenal senior year. Those are kind of the things that really put a smile on your face.
Yep. All right. Well, thanks so much, Steve Shiffert, Gene Lagathe, this year's inductees, Tony Coca, and Tom Redding. It'll be another great year. May 4th, right?
May 4th, Northampton.
All right. So looking forward to that. And, of course, come on out. Have some great stories. Tony, I know you're going to do a great job as the MC, and we'll have some very interesting stories on that special night. All right. As we head to break, the Whitehall boys volleyball team was last year's district runner-ups, and this year they have their sights set on the title. We caught up with the Zephyrs after a league win this week over Bethlehem Catholic.
You know, we needed something like this. We haven't really been tested to start the season early. It was good to see our guys, you know, come back and respond to, you know, being 2-1, being down 2-1, and being able to come back and being resilient, you know, was a good thing for us.
We just realized that we weren't really having fun. After we lost the first set, we brought it all back together. We said, you know, there's no energy. We got to just have fun and play volleyball.
It was just the energy. Beating this opponent took a lot of energy. We started out flat in the beginning, but we picked it up, and we just kept going.
We talked to the guys when we're down 2-1. You know, our energy was a little low, just limiting errors, and we were able to do that, and that was important for us to pull out the win.
Our coaches kept telling us, pick it up, pick it up, pick it up, and that's what we did.
You know, it's important, you know, for a confidence for some of our players. It's early season. We don't want to drop one early. We were able to pull away, you know, with this one in a fifth set. We got some things we got to work on, you know, as we move ourselves along.
Some of the evaluations I made was just how my coach is helping me out playing back row. You just got to read a lot back row. And then front row hitting, it's all about the block, where you want to put the ball, and who you want to attack.
We blocked well today. Real happy with that. We've been working on that. We could have dug the ball a little bit better. We got to limit errors. We made a little bit too many errors. You know, I got to give credit to Becca. They played scrappy defense. We don't want to take anything away from them. You know, just glad we're out in a five-set win. You know, excited that we're out of this one in a five-set win. We just got to keep getting better. That's what we're going to do, just keep getting better.
I just want to come out, and I want to give this team as much as I possibly can. And we're a great team, and I think we can go really far. So W's are all that matters to me.
From here on out, I think we're going to be nice, and we're going to coast it out, get a little better.
Today's game we really needed. The last two games we did not play well, and we're a much better team than we've played. So we really wanted to come out here and get redemption on some team.
Started off on a rough start, but I think now we're starting to come together and play well.
Thought it was a good time all around. The team played well together.
Continuing on with Sports Talk, joined this segment by senior sports writer at The Morning Call and co-host of the program, Keith Groller. Keith, nice to have you with us.
Always good to be with you.
And joined via the Skype line, we have Jeff Kerr from CBS Sports, 247sports.com, NFL reporter. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, my pleasure, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Good to catch up with you again. I know it was a busy offseason after an exciting season for the Philadelphia Eagles in particular. We'll be talking all about the NFL draft in just a moment, but I did want to get your thoughts on the Eagles offseason. They've made quite a number of moves this offseason, adding wide receiver Mike Wallace, Michael Bennett, Richard Rodgers, and others, and a couple familiar names no longer with the Eagles. So what are your general thoughts on the Eagles offseason so far?
Well, Chris, I really like the Michael Bennett move. I know the initial reaction, at least on the 24/7 sports page, was, why do they need Michael Bennett? Well, why don't they need Michael Bennett? He would have been their best pass rusher last year, which is kind of incredible when you think about it, when you have Brandon Graham and Fletcher Cox. Mm-hmm. But adding Michael Bennett, specifically as a third down pass rusher, tremendously helps this defense. Now you're going to have a guy who's not going to play 978 snaps in 2018. That's going to get cut down to about 400, 500. So you're going to get a more productive Bennett on top of Brandon Graham, Chris Long, who was surprisingly really good last year, Fletcher Cox, Derek Barnett coming into his own, Timmy Jernigan. I mean, this is a scary defensive line without Michael Bennett. Now you're adding him as a third down pass rusher. And all you gave up was Marcus Johnson, who is a nice young player, but he's not Michael Bennett. And a fifth-round pick, I think I would take Michael Bennett for what they gave up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you. On paper, the deal certainly looked like a steal for the Eagles. And then, of course, after that transition went down, short time after that, word came out that Michael Bennett could have some law issues. Eagles obviously are not saying a whole lot right now because a lot will be determined in the courts over the next weeks and months. But do you think this could have a lingering effect? Michael Bennett, of course, has some baggage coming in. That clubhouse seemed so unified all last year. Do you think Bennett, his off-the-field issues could have a negative effect on the Eagles?
I don't think so, Chris. It's Michael Bennett is one of the more polarizing athletes in the NFL right now because he does so much good at, you know, the whole Black Santa thing, the whole charity, what he gives back to the community. And it's so weird in Seattle. You either loved him or hated him. And I think it's going to be that way in Philadelphia. Everybody's going to look at the Vegas incident. Everybody's going to look at this recent incident. But you got to mix in the good with the bad here. And you know, the guy is an intelligent individual. There's no doubting that. And I don't know too much about what happened in Vegas that night. Same with this Houston incident. But it is kind of awkward that, you know, I mean, I don't want to get too opinionated here, but having a 66-year-old paraplegic, you know, going after him 14 months after the incident, it just seems a little bit... I think we need a little more on the situation than what's being presented right now. It just seemed like, you know, the Houston police chief is just going after Michael Bennett. And, you know, whether he's right or wrong, we don't know yet. But I just feel we need more information than what is being released. You know, when you're hiring Rusty Hardin to be your attorney, that says something. You know, Michael Bennett is trying to clear his name. But as far as it being a distraction to the Philadelphia Eagles, I don't think it's going to be like that. I just keep looking at the Nigel Bradham thing. I thought that was going to rear its ugly head as time went on, and it didn't. You know, I think, you know, you might just have like a settlement suit and this whole thing might be dropped.
Mm-hmm. On your site, you had a nice article about the Richard Rodgers signing and kind of hinted that he's going to slide into the spot previously occupied by Trey Burton. Could you elaborate a little bit on that? And it seems on the field, again, with all the issues, all the transactions that the Eagles made, it seems like there's nothing but upgrades so far, and that's prior to the draft.
Yeah, I really like the Richard Rodgers signing a lot. I thought that was a move that he wasn't on my radar by any means as a tight end the Eagles were going to go after, but he is a pass-catching specialist. There's no denying that. And what happened in Green Bay's offense was I think he lost a lot of playing time when Martellus Bennett came into the fold, and he never really got it back. And Bennett said on Rodgers said on Friday that he didn't know why he was losing playing time. He said, you know, you would have to talk to Green Bay about that. He just continued to do the role he was meant to do. But the Eagles wanted an athlete to replace Trey Burton, and Rodgers can provide that. He lined up in the backfield in Green Bay. He was kind of an H-back, but more so than not, he was a pass-catching specialist for them. People seem to forget Richard Rodgers was the guy who caught Aaron Rodgers' Hail Mary touchdown against Detroit on Thursday Night Football a couple years ago. You see the athletic ability there, and I think if he can get 300 to 500 snaps in the Eagles offense compared to 160 he had in Green Bay last year, I think it's going to make a difference. More importantly, it's going to solidify the depth of that position. The Eagles just did not have anybody outside of Zach Ertz that were proven. Billy Brown, good player, but he's never played an NFL down before in the regular season. Josh Perkins has had minimal success, but he's mostly a practice squad player. So we really don't know what the Eagles had there. And I think they are going to draft the tight end at 32. I think that's very possible. But Richard Rodgers now, I think it gives them a lot more flexibility than what they had last week at this time. Mm-hmm.
Jeff, the only thing less valuable than my NCAA tournament bracket pool before the first game is played is a mock draft, in my opinion. I mean, especially this year, I don't think we have any idea where this thing is going, but I will at the same time get your take on where we're going with trades, quarterback movement. I mean, my goodness, there could be three quarterbacks taken within maybe the first five or six picks in this draft. It's fascinating. It's fun to play around with it. It's fun to conjecture. But I don't think anybody really knows what's going to happen. What is your best guess on where we're going to go with trades in the first six, seven picks of that draft, especially when you realize that here in the Lehigh Valley, we have a young man by the name of Saquon Barkley, who a lot of people are interested and a lot of people are rooting for him to go to the Giants because they can get to see them play.
Yeah, to me, it's funny, as a Penn State grad, I mean, I'm a little biased here, but I think Saquon Barkley is far and away the best player in this draft, and I don't think you're going to get too many people that disagree with that. Personally, I think he should be going number one to the Cleveland Browns. They have a Tyrod Taylor. They have an A.J. McCarron, and the Browns can still get that quarterback at four. I think they could actually get Barkley at four. It's incredible. I know a couple Giants writers I talked to, they don't want anything to do with Saquon Barkley. They want to draft a quarterback. They're all into the whole Josh Rosen thing, which I do believe you need a franchise quarterback, but honestly, I just don't see it in this draft. Josh Allen doesn't impress me. Josh Rosen, he may be the best of the bunch. Really, you could get the best quarterback. Lamar Jackson may be the best quarterback in this draft. We honestly don't know. Baker Mayfield, there could be a guy in the later rounds. It's not like when the Eagles moved up to get Carson Wentz. They got their guy. I think Jared Goff was a good quarterback when he got drafted. Same with Wentz. I just don't see that this year. So if that's going to be the case, why don't you go after a Saquon Barkley or a Minka Fitzpatrick? Get a player who's going to make a difference for your football team and be better. You can always get that game manager quarterback in the later rounds. The Dallas Cowboys proved that. So, are you going to win a Super Bowl with any of these guys? I don't know, but honestly, if you're going for the best player available, Saquon Barkley's it.
Well, and I agree with everything you said. I mean, I watch a lot of Pac-12 football. It's usually the games that are on are Pac-12 games when I get around to watching football on a Saturday. And I'm not impressed with Darnold, Rosen, or any of those guys. Maybe Allen's the guy, or Mayfield. Mayfield looks like his stock is rising. What are your thoughts on Mayfield maybe going in the first round, maybe in the upper half of the first round?
Yeah, I think Baker Mayfield's going to be a first-round pick, and I know a lot of my friends secretly know I'm not the biggest Baker Mayfield guy. I don't even want to say he has baggage. I just don't think it's going to translate to the NFL. I think he played in an immensely spread offense with a very good offensive line and very good skill players around him and benefited off that. And, Lincoln Riley is a very good college football coach. I thought he put Baker Mayfield in the best position to put up numbers and win. And obviously, we can't deny the Rose Bowl performance, but you could say the same thing with Sam Darnold. Any quarterback looks good when a defensive back is playing 10 yards off the line of scrimmage. So, I mean, what Baker Mayfield has done is impressive. I like this. I'm very intrigued to see where he goes and where he fits, because if he can go into the right system, I think he could be a good NFL quarterback. But
back later.
I don't know. It's, to me, I just keep looking at the intangibles and the whole chip on my shoulder thing. It could work, but Johnny Manziel had a chip on his shoulder, too. It didn't seem to work out too well for him.
Jeff, our special guest this segment via the Skype is Jeff Kerr from CBS Sports and 247sports.com, NFL writer. I wanted to get your thoughts on the draft overall for the NFC East teams. Obviously, the Eagles not as much of a priority this year, picking at 32. I think the latest mock draft on your website has the Eagles going with Tyrell Crosby, a tackle out of Oregon, who I know nothing about. But what are your thoughts on some of the teams in the NFC East, and which of those teams, especially I would imagine the Giants with the number two pick, and then the Redskins and the Cowboys with some disappointments last year. For those three teams, it's going to be a big draft. Which of those three teams must have a drop-dead solid draft in order to improve?
Personally, I think the Giants are first on that. 3-13 last year, that's a problem for them. I don't think Giants fans realize their team really wasn't any good last year. And they had issues at the quarterback position with 37-year-old Eli Manning. They have issues at running back. They have a porous offensive line. Their defense, they have reshuffled. I think they need to hit a home run on every pick in this draft, which may be why they should take a chance at a quarterback at number two. And this is a deep running back class. I think you can get a running back in the later rounds. And they do have high picks, but I think the New York Giants need to have a good draft more than anybody. I think the Cowboys need depth, so it would help if they would draft, more offensive linemen, guys who can replace, the whole, Dallas' defense isn't any good without Sean Lee. Well, get a guy to replace Sean Lee. Stop relying on Sean Lee. Stop relying on DeMarcus Lawrence and your stars to be healthy for 16 games a year. That just doesn't work. So I don't think Dallas needs much Washington, they're in such a state of flux. I really don't know what direction they're going in. I like some of the moves they're making this offseason, but they could be a team that could be interested in drafting the quarterback. Alex Smith is no spring chicken here. So they're an intriguing team as well. And as for the Eagles, well, they don't need much. I just think it's more of restocking a roster. Do they have needs? Not pressing needs. I mean, when your most pressing need is probably slot cornerback and you already have a guy to replace him, Patrick Robinson in the Jalen Mills, that's saying something about your football team. Mm-hmm.
As far as the Giants, do you think there's rumors, again, your website has Bradley Chubb right now, defensive end out of North Carolina State, going with the Giants. Lots of rumors they could go after a quarterback, as you mentioned, to replace Eli Manning. What's your gut tell you what the Giants will do with that number two pick?
I think they're going to draft the quarterback, honestly. You got to take a chance on one of these guys. But again, who's the right quarterback? Is it Josh Rosen? Is it Josh Allen? Is it Sam Darnold? Is it Baker Mayfield? Is it Lamar Jackson? I really can't tell you. I don't think there's a clear-cut number one in this draft. If I had the ranked quarterbacks right now, I probably would give Rosen the edge. And somehow I just think Cleveland's going to screw this up and draft Josh Allen. For some bizarre reason, I think that it's just the way it is with that franchise. And I think the Giants could get their man. And, you know, if it is Josh Rosen, I do like the Giants' future. I don't think Josh Rosen will ever be a Carson Wentz or a Jared Goff or anybody like that. But I think he can develop into a solid NFL quarterback. And as we saw, Pat Shurmur has done some wonders with a couple quarterbacks over the last couple of years, Sam Bradford, Case Keenum. And why can't he make Josh Rosen better?
Jeff, I want to get your take on the Eagles in terms of who is the number one threat right now to them in the NFC. And I'll piggyback off that. And have they done enough to kind of reload a little bit here? Obviously, you're going to lose players. It always happens in the National Football League. Do you think to this point, with the draft still 2 weeks away, have they done enough to reload and prepare for the inevitable loss of players that always happens with a Super Bowl champion?
Yeah, Keith, I think it's the Minnesota Vikings right now. I'm getting tired of hearing the Rams talk. The Rams remind me of the 2011 Eagles dream team, bringing in all these questionable personalities and trying to get them all to fit. And yes, I understand they have the coaching staff to do that, but actually saying it and doing it are two different things. The Vikings, they needed the upgraded quarterback. They got their man in Kirk Cousins. I'm not saying Kirk Cousins is a great quarterback, but he's a heck of a lot better than Case Keenum is. They added Sheldon Richardson on that defensive line. I think the Vikings are smart moving on from Sam Bradford, from Teddy Bridgewater, from Case Keenum, just giving all the money to Kirk Cousins and saying, you know what, this is our window. We have it right now. If we can get the number one seed in the NFC, as the Vikings showed last year, they were very tough to beat in U.S. Bank Stadium. So I think the Vikings feel they're not as far away from that 38-7 NFC championship defeat to the Eagles as many other fans and other teams alike do. But I still think right now it's Eagles, Vikings, and then everybody's just kind of looking at them. I know the Falcons will be good. I know the Rams will be good. I know the Cowboys are going to be good again. But to me, it's Eagles, Vikings, and then everybody's just kind of looking up at those two at this point.
Jeff, before we let you go, any kind of out-of-left-field predictions you'd like to offer? I know there's so many mock drafts out there. Probably somebody somewhere has the correct order of how everything is going to shape out. But the conventional wisdom out there, is there any kind of idea or a player that's kind of under the radar or things that may shock people come opening day, the first day, or even the second day with rounds 2 and 3?
You know what? It's so funny with the second and third round of the draft, it's hard to pay attention to it because the Eagles pick right now. I actually think the Eagles could trade out of number 32. I did a couple stories on, you know, if you trade out of 32, teams want that pick because of that fifth-year player option that you get with the first-round pick. The Eagles can move down a couple spots, still get their guy, particularly a tight end, from 33 to 36, get it a high fourth-round pick, trade two of those fourth-round picks, and get into the third round. Yeah, you have the same number of picks, but you also have those valuable day two picks that Eagles, vice president of player personnel, Joe Douglas, seems to admire. It seems like the Eagles really want to do their damage in the mid rounds of the draft. And unless you can get a guy that you feel is going to make an instant impact at 32, Darius Geis, Sony Michel, guys like that, you know, Mike Gesicki, I think the Eagles can draft in the second round. I think the Eagles can get Dallas Goedert in the second round, tight end out of South Dakota State. I think those guys, they can afford to wait on, but if they really want their hands on Geis or, you know, a Sony Michel, a guy like that, then I say pick a 32. But that's, I don't even want to call it a bold prediction. I just think that that's what the Eagles are going to do. They are going to trade out of 32, just trade down a couple spots and restock draft picks. Howie Roseman has said they would like to do that. And personally, I think that's what they're going to do. That's my mock draft, if you will. Mm-hmm.
Jeff, you're saying that the Eagles are going to make noise with the trade. I think the fans are going to make noise in Dallas. What are your thoughts on Eagles Nation being represented there in Jerry Jones's palace? I think it's going to be fun to see them make a lot of noise when it's finally their time to pick. It could be the second or third round, like you say, if they trade down. But what are your thoughts on this spectacle that is now known as the NFL draft?
Well, I'll tell you what, Jerry Jones really has to one up what Philadelphia did last year. And Eagles fans, do not forget what Drew Pearson did last year, rubbing it in that the Dallas Cowboys have five Super Bowls. Well, that's great. You know how old I was when they had their last Super Bowl? I was, you know, 7 years old. I mean, Rick Sam was on TV the first time and the last time the Cowboys won the Super Bowl. So, you know, it's been a while for them. And I think Eagles fans are going to show up in Dallas and they're going to make their presence felt and they're going to let everybody know who the defending Super Bowl champions are, especially the Cowboys fans that travel in there. And, you know, they may trade out 32, so you can get a guy like Brian Dawkins to say the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles instead of Goodell doing it and try to one-up what Pearson did. But, I mean, to be honest with you, it's going to be loud there. I think the cameras from ESPN and NFL Network will definitely be on Eagles fans to see what they do, how they react. I know they've gotten a bad rep from Vikings fans from that NFC Championship game, and really – we all know that 10, 20 Eagles fans does not make up millions across the country. And I think the Eagles fans will show themselves well at the draft.
Jeff, thanks so much for your time and continued success with all the great NFL coverage for 247sports.com.
Thank you, Jeff.
No problem. Thanks for having me on, guys.
All right. Jeff Kerr, outstanding NFL reporter for CBS and 247sports.com. That'll do it for tonight's edition of Sports Talk. For Keith, I'm Chris. Good night, everyone.